Coming up on Tech News Weekly, Jason Howell and I have a great show for you. We talk to the editor-in-chief of Motherboard about Twitter's new audio feature. 140 seconds of audio you can post to your stream. Is it easy to moderate? Is it difficult to moderate? I think you can make a guess, but Jason has so much more information for you there. Plus, we talk to 9 to 5 Mac's Zach Hall about WWDC, Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference, which is just around the corner. Before rounding things out with our stories of the week, the FDA just approved a video game as a type of medication. What? And Google has a new project for you. It's like Pinterest, but it's done automatically. All that and so much more coming up on this week's episode of Tech News Weekly. Tech News Weekly is brought to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? Well, LastPass can ensure that they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether they're working in the office or remote. Visit LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Tech News Weekly, episode 138, recorded Thursday, June 18th, 2020.
This episode of Tech News Weekly is brought to you by IT Pro TV. Learn the ins and outs of IT careers and get the most up-to-date training with IT Pro TV. Visit itpro.tv/TNW for an additional 30% off all consumer subscriptions for the lifetime of your active subscription and use code TNW30 at checkout.
Hello and welcome to Tech News Weekly, the show where every week sometimes I do weird voices, but we always talk to and about the people making and breaking the tech news. I am Micah Sargent.
Hey, Micah. I'm Jason Howell. It's good to see y'all. It's good to, you know, see your faces out there in the audience. We aren't actually looking at you, but it's nice to know that you're out there nonetheless. Yeah,
if there was just little virtual faces.
If anything, maybe we could hear your voices, which really ties in to the top story. Maybe we will hear your voices on Twitter. Twitter yesterday began rolling out a new feature that allows users to record up to 140 seconds of audio and post it to their timelines easily. On one hand, this adds a new way to share thoughts on the service, and of course that makes sense. But on the other hand, is now the right time for Twitter to unleash such a difficult to moderate feature? Well, Motherboard's editor-in-chief Jason Kubler wrote an article that touches on just that challenge and joins us now to talk about it. Welcome to the show, Jason.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm so happy to get you on the show. I've wanted to get you on before, and I really appreciate you taking the time for us today. So thank you. So before we get into kind of the mess around moderation that is modern day Twitter, how exactly is this feature designed to work? Like, and who does it work for? Because I know it's limited to iOS right now, right?
Yeah, for the moment, it's very limited. It's iOS only, and people will only be able to upload voice clips that are not replies or retweets. So they'll only be like native tweets out into the world, which is, I think, is really important for reasons we'll talk about in a second. But it's like you can't at reply someone with the audio. Another thing is you can't upload sounds. Like you can't upload a file. You have to just use your microphone to record it from your smartphone, if that makes sense. Like you can't take an MP3 mm-hmm. and dump it in and hope that Twitter just takes it, because they won't.
Yeah, because I've seen some people saying, hey, this actually would be a good kind of promotional outlet for podcasters, let's say. Of course, that's near and dear to our heart. That's exactly what we do. But like taking a clip from a podcast and just releasing that as a 140-second kind of tweet isn't going to work unless you're recording it through a mic. It might kind of diminish the purposes in the first place.
Right. It's kind of a cool idea, I think, because – you know, you could imagine a scenario in which a band would want to debut a song on Twitter, or like you said, you do an audio clip of a podcast. That's something that we want to do as well. But right now that functionality isn't there. And instead they just want to, it seems like they want it to be voice notes, which we do know are quite popular, especially in other countries. They're very popular in South America on WhatsApp, people just sending voice notes back and forth. We've also seen other apps try things like this in the past. But they're rolling it out to such a small group of people right now. Like, even though I have iOS, I can't use it yet. So I haven't seen a ton of voice tweets out in the wild yet. I don't know if you have.
I've seen a few here and there, pretty much journalists saying, hey, I'm testing the feature, and that's about it. Nothing of real substance, I would say. Micah, what about you?
Yeah, I just haven't seen very many at all. And by golly, I keep trying to force quit my app. And you know, I've updated it. I've force quit it. And it's not working for me yet. So I've been eager to just, as everyone else is, kind of just give it a go. Hey, I'm just chilling in Cedar Rapids or something that I can put on there. And it's not currently an option for me. So yeah, I haven't seen too many people using it. But, you know, I've certainly seen all the hot takes about it.
I mean, and it's currently, you know, early days on this feature. Like, I remember in the very, very beginning days of Twitter, just as a service, it was like, what do I do with 140 characters? I guess I tell everybody that I'm eating lunch and what I'm eating. People are going to, you know, I imagine as they get more familiar with this feature, understand why they might use it or what, you know, an audio tweet is good for versus what it's kind of a waste of time for or whatever. You mentioned in your article, you bring up the topic that really sprung to mind for me when I first kind of, when I've started seeing these pop up is, wow, like for me, it was, dang it, I have to actually listen. I can't like read a transcript, which is usually what I do when I'm searching through my feed and I see video. Often I don't even listen to it. I just read the transcript that might appear there. But that's not happening here. You kind of take that one step further and say, well, yeah, moderation about these audio files is going to be incredibly difficult. Why so? What makes this particular feature so difficult to moderate?
Well, the problem is you just have to listen to it, which it sounds very basic, but it's like, of course, there are audio transcription services, but they're not super widely used. They're not always very accurate. And yeah, the first thing I thought when I saw this is like, A, did Twitter think this through? B, who was clamoring for this? And C, like, are we now going to have Nazis in our replies sending death threats, you know? And that's like a very, I mean, it sounds crazy, but that's a very real concern. There's a super well-documented history of harassment and moderation problems on Twitter that date back a decade. Twitter is, I mean, it's had very real conversations about whether they should allow white supremacists to stay on the platform so that people can see this do counter speech, which is kind of out of fashion in the academic community about how things should be moderated. And then you're adding audio, which, as you mentioned, is a much harder type of content to moderate. And the reason for that is if it's an image, you can look at it real quick and you can say, okay, like, is this graphic? Does this violate the rules? Same with text. You can read it very quickly. But with audio, I mean, if someone uploads an hour of content, which in this case, you know, Twitter's only allowing 140 seconds, but if you go over that 140 seconds, it will automatically thread the tweets. So you could imagine someone reading a manifesto on Twitter or what have you, and you'd have to have someone listen to that in the absence of AI tools that automatically transcribe it, which I asked Twitter about yesterday, and they said that they currently don't have any AI. So, yeah, it sounds like human moderators are going to be listening to this and having to decide whether or not it violates Twitter's rules.
Man, when I think about that, when I think of kind of the potency of how Twitter and other social networks have been used for hate speech and for people just piling on other people and making them feel like complete crap, if not fearing for their lives in many cases, like, that's words on a page, which is one thing. Actually hearing the sound of that voice, hearing, you know, potentially hearing the hate behind that voice, that's a frightening thing to consider, something just dropping into your feed. It really does take it to another level. Not having AI to analyze this means that it's a huge mountain for Twitter to potentially, you know, figure out how they tackle this. And if people are talking about it right now, you better believe it's going to happen. Have we heard of any of this already happening at this point? I realize it's a day later, you know, one day into this grand experiment, but a lot of people have said this is going to happen, but have we seen it yet? Have we heard of any yet?
Yeah, so I haven't seen it on Twitter, but I think one of the reasons why I feel confident saying that this is probably going to be a problem is because – you have things like voice chat on PlayStation 4, on Discord, things like this, where there's tons of racism, there's tons of toxicity there. And a lot of the moderation might happen after the fact because it's happening live. And it's like you said, I mean, if you hear someone's hate, like that can be, it's just a lot more visceral than text, I think. So we haven't seen this. And I mean, to be clear, like I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. I think we all might be. I mean, it's possible that this rolls out and it goes fine. I think there's like one of three options. It's like this rolls out and no one uses it and it goes away and it's a weird footnote. I think that's very possible. Another is that it's like a huge disaster, like kind of right before the election. And you can, like, it's a very heated time right now. I think that that's like pretty likely. And then there's another option where Twitter beefs up its moderation, beefs up its AI, and it ends up being no more of a problem than moderating tweets. And I think that there is a possibility that that happens because you have to remember, like, Twitter has Periscope. Twitter allows for uploading videos. Like, it's not like Twitter is text only. I would just point to the fact that Twitter hasn't done that great of a job at moderation on scale. We did a big feature last year, and it's like they have fewer human moderators than any of the other platforms, which is fair because it's a smaller platform than YouTube or Facebook, but they have like orders of magnitude fewer. And so they are not responding to reports very quickly, and they've been criticized over and over for it.
Yeah, right. Now, another aspect of this also is just the fact that, you know, this is a limiting factor from an accessibility standpoint. Has Twitter addressed that at all? Do they have, I mean, I, like, again, my mind just goes right back around to this kind of like AI generated captioning, which, you know, Google, like I'm on Android, on my Pixel phone, like I can turn that on by default. It's embedded into the OS and I can't even tell you how useful that is for features such as this. It would be a great workaround for me, but not everybody has access to that, especially people who you know, might need extra help in the accessibility range of things. So has Twitter addressed that at all?
Not that I've seen. If they did, it was within the last like hour or two and I missed it. But yeah, I mean, this really feels like a beta test in many ways, which I guess is fine. I mean, you know, obviously big companies roll out things like this all the time where they're testing things. But it's weird that Twitter made such a public announcement of something like this and then rolled it out to so few users and didn't really have an answer on the accessibility question or on the content moderation question, other than like, we're kind of seeing how it goes, which I don't know, maybe that's the new way that they're going to be operating, where it's like, we'll roll this out to a few users, but we're going to make a big flashy announcement alongside it. It's like when we've seen product launches in the past, like usually Facebook will roll it out kind of in secret and a user will notice like, oh, hey, look, I can do audio tweets now, or I can do XYZ. Like they're testing Facebook dating without, you know, it being a big announcement with a blog post and a very public tweet. So yeah, it feels like they're kind of just like putting it out there and seeing what happens, which is a little scary.
Yeah, right. We see how that goes time and time again with services that are like, ah, we just wanted to test it. And then, you know, all the walls come crumbling down. Now, one thing, you know, to consider about this, and I kind of, it, along with everything else, hadn't really considered it until this morning, is just that something like voice data can be incredibly valuable to companies like this. Google and Apple, they both have a lot of their services and a lot of their data collection behind the scenes pivots on voice data. Do you think that's kind of part of the reason why, kind of like whether Twitter would want to admit it or not, like driving a feature like this gives them access to valuable data, right? What could they do with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Twitter is like light years behind Facebook and Google when it comes to ad targeting and when it comes to building up profiles of who people are. You know, Facebook knows so much about its users, as does Google, whereas Twitter knows some things. But I saw a tweet the other day that went viral where it was like, Twitter thinks I'm between the age of 13 and 54. And it's like, that is not very accurate. And this was a woman who was, I don't know, in her like 20s or something. So she's like, I would have had to have joined Twitter. Like, I've been on Twitter 10 years. Does Twitter think that I joined when I was 3 if they think that I'm 13? And so, yeah, I mean, this is a treasure trove of data. They can analyze it. They can, I mean, you could imagine a future in which Twitter rolls out some sort of like voice to text tweet feature or something. I don't know. I'm just kind of riffing here, but there's a lot of things that it can do to train AI on this sort of data and use it to better target ads or what have you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Jason Kebler, of course, vice.com, motherboard, through Vice. I love your work. I'm so happy we could get you on today. And I do think that it's important to think about this stuff now, not feeling like we're getting ahead of ourselves now, like early on in a feature like this is when you think about this stuff so that it doesn't become a bigger snowball than you can manage later. So I'm happy that you wrote this. It really got my mind thinking, and I appreciate your time, Jason. If people want to follow you online, where can they do so?
I'm at Jason_Kebler on Twitter. So there's my name, add an underscore in the middle, and you can find my bad tweets and pictures of my dog.
Right on. Who's been sleeping on the bed the entire time? Did not bark once.
Yeah, let's see.
Although it would have been okay.
Good puff.
There's Mango.
Would have been totally fine. Actually, it would have been a bonus if your dog had barked. But yeah. We appreciate both of you joining us today. Thank you, Jason.
All right. Have a good one. Thank you.
As well.
Take care.
All righty. Up next, Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference is just around the corner. What can we expect? Well, we will answer that question shortly. But first, this episode of Tech News Weekly is brought to you by
IT Pro TV.
If you're interested in an IT career but aren't sure where to start, IT Pro TV has taken the guesswork out of it all. IT Pro TV's learning coaches will help you navigate the IT career roadmap and will assist in finding the perfect career that's right for you. You can sign up for a premium membership and let an expert guide you. You'll start by setting goals, and your coach will implement an IT training program to help you reach them. Their extensive IT career paths library can assist you in learning more about the different IT careers and help you pick which one is best for you. From entry-level IT to cybersecurity, you can learn the ins and outs of them all as a jumping-off point, such as what you'll be doing and how much you have the potential to make. Once your training is complete, IT Pro TV takes it a step further and helps assist you in finding the career of your dreams. IT Pro TV also has a learning coach for teams. You can engage and grow the skill base of your team members through a corporate premium membership. There are over 4,000 hours of IT training that are on offer, as well as being the official video training partner for CompTIA. And plus, they have 12 CompTIA on-demand courses, including CompTIA A+, Network Plus, and Security Plus certifications. Now is the perfect time to maximize the potential of your team and help them get the certifications they need to become successful. Let IT Pro TV guide you into the IT career that is best for you. You just head to itpro.tv/TNW and use the code TNW30 to receive 30% off all consumer subscriptions. That's itpro.tv/TNW and use the code TNW30 for an additional 30% off for the lifetime of your active subscription. IT Pro TV. Build or expand your IT career and enjoy the journey. Thanks so much to IT Pro TV for sponsoring this week's episode of Tech News Weekly. All righty, folks. WWDC 2020 is right around the corner. And I did have to do a double check there. Is it 2020? Yes. And
we all want to erase 2020, but yes, no, unfortunately we can't.
But I don't want to go back. I want to keep going forward. So WWDC 2025. So excited to talk about the next versions of iOS, macOS, tvOS, watchOS, et cetera. And to help us get prepared for WWDC, we have 9to5Mac Zach Hall here. Joining us. Hello, Zach.
Hey, everybody. How are y'all?
Doing well. I am loving that artwork on your wall. Can we just go back to that for? Oh, yeah. Very cool. Very cool. I'm jealous. Look at my wall in comparison.
Oh, nice. Nice enhancement there.
Nice. Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, and then I've just got this here. So that's great.
Thank you so much. Showing me up. It's a canvas.
Yeah, exactly. There's so much to do on it. So let's talk about this first. Let's set everybody's expectations. Typically, when folks think of Apple announcements, I think they think of hardware. Can we expect any hardware at this event? And what else? If Apple's not announcing hardware, what else will they be announcing?
Yeah, that's a good question. Hardware-wise, we think we're probably on track to see a new iMac, the first redesign since 2012, which was a very minor redesign. So this will be a big deal where you kind of take the iMac that has this known look for the last decade and you make it look more like a giant iPad minus the touchscreen, but just having very thin bezels and a whole lot sleeker. And so that's what feels like it's guaranteed for hardware. We also think that for this WWDC, we'll see the first stages of the Mac transitioning from an Intel chip to an ARM chip, which may involve some like pre-release hardware that developers can use, or maybe, you know, it involves the iPad. We don't know yet. But that's for like future hardware into mid next year to have new Macs that have the same chips as like iPads do. So you get all those benefits.
Okay. So quite a bit for sure. So let's talk about what we can expect from iOS, the next version of iOS. So we currently are, you know, rocking iOS 13. There have been some updates recently that added new features. But what do we know? I think 9to5 Mac of any site seems to have been reading the, not even just the tea leaves, but the code bits, as it were. And so maybe talk about, you know, some big highlights that you think we can expect for iOS 14.
Yeah, the whole recipe for the tea. So it's kind of two parts to WWDC, I think, next week for iOS. There's iOS 14, which is going to be the big new deal. But then there's also iOS 13.6, which I think we'll see announced next week and released soon after. For that upcoming release to iOS 13, we believe we'll see Apple News Audio, which is this new feature within the Apple News Plus subscription service, where instead of just digital magazines and newspapers, you also pay and you get access to like author read or, you know, maybe even just names you recognize reading news articles. So it gives you a different version than just what you can find on the web. So that'll be a new thing. We also believe we'll see Car Key, which is a feature that lets you use your iPhone or Apple Watch to unlock your car and start your car versus having a key fob or a remote or an app even. It'll just be like proximity based. And those things seem to be ready and baked in probably to iOS 13.6. For iOS 14, there's a lot of stuff there. We think that we'll get a new AR app from Apple that will work with some stuff from Starbucks and other places that will kind of be the first like built-in demonstration of augmented reality. We think HomeKit will have a big change where there'll be features to like change the color temperature of your lights throughout the day based on sunset, improvements to the way that the Apple TV can work with audio, like with HomePod, for example. And their new feature in iOS 14 called Clips for developers, where you can have like a portion of an app be available to use without downloading the full app, which is kind of a version of an Android feature that'll be coming to iOS, we think, next week, or at least with 14.
Interesting. So I hadn't heard about Clips. Certainly,
it's an oldie, Clips, but a goodie. Yeah.
Yeah. The Clips that, you know, I think of is that app that very few people use that lets you do video and stuff like that. But the fact right. that this lets you have some content without even having to install the app, that is some very interesting stuff. So yeah, looking
forward
cool stuff
to you can do with AR and proximity with NFC, so that you could like maybe wave your phone near, you know, a display and have what you need to, like, you know, pay for parking with Apple Pay or like book, you know, reservation, see a menu, those kind of things. So we think we'll see some cool examples there.
Yeah.
I'm looking over, can I jump in real quick? I'm looking over this list and my eyes are like landing on the tweaked home screen. And I'm just realizing like some of these changes are super like Android, right? Like the you mentioned in the article, or is it Chance that it, no, sorry, it was Philippe wrote the article that I'm looking at, but he writes that the home screen widgets on the home screen potentially coming soon, maybe not at this WWDC, but somewhere down the line, and then having some sort of like a sorted list, like an alphabetical mm-hmm. or sortable list of all your apps on the device. It's so interesting how both sides really borrow from each other. Given a long enough amount of time, it's like they all end up merging into the same kind of bubble.
Yeah, Apple's been super hesitant to do widgets on the home screen, like even on the iPad where you've got this gigantic screen and lots of blank space to fill it with widgets. They've always had the widgets either be through a long press on an app icon, which is really hidden, or on that very first home screen, like to the left of your first home screen. And again, it's not very accessible in its location. So hopefully this has at least been in the works. We don't know what has happened since like December when this was all in progress from what we saw. So it could be that COVID-19 has had an effect on what they do work on and what gets released. But it's certainly being considered. And the list view thing, you know, it could be that homepage zero becomes like just an alphabetical version of your apps or, you know, however. So we do think that there'll be some visual change there, hopefully both on the iPhone and the iPad. We didn't find any indication that it was just the iPad. So that's good news.
Yeah, that's kind of I tell you, I really would love that. Was the one thing that always that I always dug about Android, or I should say continue to dig about Android, is the widgets. So let's talk about, I know you do a podcast about the watch. Let's talk about watchOS. What can we expect the big headline features for watchOS?
Yeah, so watchOS 7, one of the big things, I'm a dad, I've got two kids, is better parental controls for the watch. Right now, if you want to give your kid an Apple Watch, you also need to give them an Apple ID and an iPhone necessarily. Starting with watchOS 7, we think that the parent can set up an Apple Watch for the child, and it'll be in this mode that doesn't require an iPhone. Then you get the benefits of like communication and location sharing without having to have, you know, that big investment in an iPhone and plan. So that'll be really neat. There's a thing called school time, which is when the kid goes to school, you set these hours where the watch is restricted to certain apps and complications and maybe watch faces. And that'll be neat because right now there's, you know, you can do anything you can do with a smartphone on an Apple Watch in school, and kids find ways to take advantage of that. So there'll be a new parental control feature for that. And then there's some stuff that kind of, we don't know if it's going to be in software or hardware required. So it could either be next week or this fall with an Apple Watch event. But things like sleep tracking has been long in the works, and we think it's really close to ready, if not done. We don't know if it'll require new hardware or not, but we hope it doesn't. And then the ability to take a blood oxygen sensor measurement so that you can see the blood oxygen level at any time, which is something you can do with like $10 and $20 fingertip accessories, but to have it built into the watch would be a big convenience. And it's just a whole new health metric for the watch that we haven't seen yet.
Yeah, I'm really hopeful for that one. looking forward to that. Let's talk about the big kahuna. That would be the Mac. What are we looking at with macOS?
Yeah, with macOS, I mean, the big story I think is going to be this year will be the transition from Intel chips to ARM chips to Apple custom design chips based on the ARM format. So what that will mean is you'll see in the future Macs that behave more like iPads in terms of performance, where, you know, we've been doing like these Geekbench test scores on iPads for a long, long time. And we see, oh, well, this single core score is faster than the newest MacBook Pro, for example. And, you know, it just feels wild that like, okay, but there's different operating systems and different capabilities. It would be great to have that iPad chip in the MacBook Pro. And we think that by next year that will start, but you've got to prepare the apps to work on the ARM chips and not just on Intel chips. So this will be the transition announcement of that, where we see here are the tools, you know, get to work. And then by next year, there'll be hardware that you can buy that uses it. And then some small things like one of my favorite things is that Messages on the Mac, we think is going to be replaced with what's called a Mac Catalyst version, which is taking the iPad app and bringing it to the Mac. And so there's a lot of features you can do on iOS with Messages, with sticker packs and message apps and Apple Pay Cash to send money to people. And you can't do half of those on the Mac. And if you can, they're not done very well. So we think that we'll see that app be replaced by a much better app that'll have new features in the same kind of cadence as iOS.
All right. Yeah, I've kind of waited for that myself, some of the things we can do on iOS that we can't currently do on our Macs. So hopefully more of that. I guess last, any other things that you are looking forward to, that you've heard rumored, that you know, think is worth talking about that maybe we haven't hit so far?
Today we had a story we've been doing this since March, really. And we've had a story today that's just brand new, which is that the podcast – Apple Podcast app will have this whole new version that looks a lot more like the music app in terms of how it's laid out and works underneath the scenes. That there'll be recommendations, that there'll be spots for bonus content like videos in the podcast app. So if you do a podcast and, you know, you maybe have a subscription and people pay for that and they get access to a video, that you'd be able to have that there. Trailers for each episode, not just trailers for each podcast, you know, show. And then just a whole big new user interface. And we think that's probably going to be for Apple shifting into having their own original podcast that they're giving so much love to the podcast app. But that's the, I mean, we're all here. We like podcast, and it seems like Apple's podcast app next week will get a big upgrade.
Cool. Well, that's something we can definitely look forward to. Zach Hall, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Where can people follow you online if they'd like to?
Sure. Work on 9to5mac.com as a lead editor. I do a space site now, which is in the network, called spaceexplore.com. So that's linked from 9to5mac if you look for it. And then the big new thing you mentioned, I've got a watch podcast called Watch Time. And we're doing a virtual 5K for WWDC. And what it is if you run or walk a 3.1 mile run or walk, then you get entered into a giveaway to win one of between 500 and 1,000 9to5mac stickers. And it's going to be really fun. So you go to wwdc.tempo.run to find out how to sign up for that.
Cool. That's awesome. Nice. Well, cool. Love it. Thank you. Yeah, we do absolutely appreciate you joining us again.
Thank you, Zach. Mm-hmm. We'll talk to you soon. All right. Story of the week. Is it stories of the week or is it story of the weeks? It's stories of the week. I think that's right. Actually, I knew that the second
story
came out
of the week.
Yes. Yeah. Of those. Yeah. The FDA just approved the first prescription video game. Apparently, this is a first. It's for kids with ADHD, attention deficit disorder. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration basically did something that we've not seen before by approving the video game. It can legally be prescribed as medicine. The game is called Endeavor RX. It was formerly called Project Evo or EVO by a company called Acli Interactive. It's for iPhone and iPad right now. I don't know if there are any plans to bring this to Android. Kids ages 8 to 12 years old with ADHD. And you can see a little bit of the gameplay right now if you're watching the video. The game involves kind of like dodging obstacles, collecting targets. I don't know, like... describing it like that, it sounds like a video game. It sounds like any old video game. But apparently this game in particular has been put through 7 years of clinical trials, 600 children tested. And when prescribed, because I think it's still kind of early, like it's not being actively prescribed yet. There's a wait list that you can join. But when it is prescribed, they're recommending 25 minutes per day, 5 days per week, 4 weeks. And after doing that for 4 weeks, they saw 1/3 of the kids that were tested had, quote, no longer any measurable attention deficit on at least one measure of objective attention. So turns out playing this video game actually improves your ability to be, you know, to hold your attention to things. You know, we're so used to thinking of video games as like distractions. And apparently this is the opposite.
So when I was back when I was in college, I was listening to a podcast from a couple of dear friends of mine now, who at the time I didn't know personally. And one of them, he is a podcaster as well. And also he has two daughters that are on the autism spectrum. And those two daughters were also diagnosed with ADHD. And in the process of getting this ADHD diagnosis, the guy started to realize that some of the symptoms that their doctor, the daughter's doctor, was talking about were things that he had experienced. And he was always, growing up successful in school and didn't have any issues. And so typically those two are associated. The idea that you would perform poorly in school if you had ADHD. And so that's kind of what teachers would look for in order to sort of suggest
suggest to the parent maybe that the child needed to be tested for it. He went and was, you know, talked to a psychiatrist about it. And the psychiatrist said, yeah, that sounds like a lot of the symptoms. And he ended up being diagnosed with ADHD. In talking about that on this podcast, I came to the realization that many of those struggles were things that I had experienced as well. I wanted to be certain with you know, all reasonable doubt cast aside that that was something that I truly had. So I took things a step further and went to what's called a neuropsychologist, where not only do they talk to you and sort of get your backstory, but they also do an electrocardiogram and some other physical diagnostics to determine if you have a condition. And so my brain was scanned. And you know, I came in after this, like, I think it was a 3-month process, and he's showing me my brain waves and showing these areas of high energy that are meant to be on level, while some areas were low that were meant to be on level. And so it basically showed that I had ADHD, and he called it a specific form of ADHD called high IQ ADHD. And essentially what that means is that the intelligence quotient of a person masks many of the symptoms of ADHD because, you know, you are essentially using that intelligence to continue to achieve, even though it's at a much more difficult level for you because of the ADHD. So all of that's to say, I was diagnosed with ADHD, and whenever you shared this story, this made me happy because there are many different types of treatments that kids and adults can use for ADHD, and some are more severe, some are less severe. Many of them, of course, are tested and tested and tested, but this was tested for, I think they said, what? Seven years of clinical trials, and with the playing this game, it showed that it actually did help with one measure of objective attention and didn't have that deficit. That's huge. That is gigantic. There is a body of research that suggests that our motor cortex plays a role in ADHD. And when you exercise your motor cortex more, you then are helping the underlying conditions of ADHD, the underlying symptoms of ADHD. And so hand-eye coordination and things like that are often lessened in folks who have ADHD. And so by strengthening that, you actually improve upon it. So original research and treatments involved some hand-eye coordination games. So I'm not surprised that a video game where you're sort of dodging obstacles and collecting targets would help to strengthen the motor cortex. So all of this is very fascinating to me. I love it. I think this is great.
I mean, to that end, when you're talking about hand-eye coordination, God, I mean, video games are awesome for hand-eye coordination. That's what it's all about. You're looking at the screen, analyzing what you're seeing, and then directing your hands to make very subtle, in many cases, subtle movements and combinations of movements in order to direct the action on the screen. So it really makes me wonder if video games are actually just in general kind of good or better for someone with ADHD to kind of strengthen that. I mean, or let's say better than not using it. Like would someone see improvements in that regard by simply just playing video games in the sense that they do have that hand-eye coordination aspect to it? And I wonder what's different about this compared to playing any modern video game between the two. I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah. It is important to note on this, the study involved doctors who were actually working for the developer of the game. So, you know, they in to some degree, they had a vested interest in these studies, but the FDA ultimately approved it. They were able to, they did a number of studies over 7 years. So it's not like it was rushed out or anything like that. And the doctors did also conclude that the game shouldn't be used as an alternative to traditional treatments for ADHD, more like a supplement, something to go along with it, because it doesn't treat all of ADHD necessarily, but it is very effective in certain aspects of treatment there. So, it's kind of cool. Like a video game who was it? Knox Harrington in the chat room wrote, that's the key of the story. With FDA approval, insurance can pay for this now. So insurance paying for a video game. There you go.
Insurance, can you pay for these in-app purchases, please? Right. I've racked up $300. No. No, I think this is great. Yeah. Let's see. What have I got for you? So Google has a new experiment out called Keen, K-E-E-N, which is a machine learning, it's got the machine learning bits and bops, but it combines Google search and machine learning to help you find things that you are interested in. So let's talk about it. You may be familiar with Google's search feature that lets you get an email anytime something within a search term pops up on the web. So, for example, maybe you've got an aunt who is an excellent photographer and you want to make sure that you get all of her latest work. And so you type in Aunt Ilda's name into the Google search feature, and it says, email me anytime Google finds a new result with Aunt Ilda involved. And then that email would get sent to you. Well, that's one way of doing things. But the team wanted to take things a step further and combine the idea of Pinterest with automation. So when you think about Pinterest, you go to the site and you create a virtual pin board. So maybe you've got a whole stream of adorable dogs, and then you go all over the internet and you pin those photos and videos and things like that of the adorable dog. What if someone or something did that for you? So the idea here is that you create a Keen. It could be dog training. It could be how to sew face masks. It could be, any number of things. And then the Google magic happens to provide you some options for sort of honing in on your actual idea. And it essentially creates a pin board for you, a bunch of different links and articles and blog posts across the entire internet, not even, things that are, it's not time sensitive. It's not the most recent things, but it just finds a bunch of stuff using Google search and machine learning so that you have just a page full of content available to you that you can then learn more about dog training or mask sewing or whatever it happens to be. So I think this is pretty great. Like I said, it's like Pinterest, but where you don't have to do any of the legwork. You just get to go and see the final pin board that you want based on the content that you've looked up.
Yeah, this is neat. I'm kind of thumbing through it right now. I installed it right before the show. And I've got it associated with my account. I can make a wood block prints of a log. And then it kind of shows the process.
Oh,
and
you cool.
Dive in there and find different DIY projects that involve logs. If logs happen to be your thing, there's a lot of projects in here to keep you busy. But area 120 of mm-hmm. Google is, an experimental wing of Google. They actually just the other day, earlier this year, released an app called Tangi, which I have that as well. And it's kind of like Pinterest in a different way. It's like Pinterest, but with video. And it's also centered around creative projects and stuff. They released this earlier this year, but they just brought it to Android a couple of days ago. So this particular department, Area 120, seems to be doing a lot along these lines. And I don't know, it would be interesting to see how they stick around, if there's any traction around it, what it leads to. This is a thing on Tangi about magic sand. Uh-oh, really loud. But this is almost like, Tangi's almost like Pinterest and TikTok got together. Got like the TikTok on the side, and I don't know. It's kind of interesting
Tangi,
what they're throwing together on these things.
And give.
Yeah.
Interesting. Huh. There you go. Yeah. So it's fascinating that they continue to work on this one specific type of content. We'll see, I guess, what else they do. They worked with Google's People and AI research team, which is focused on human-centered machine learning. So that was another team involved with the program that created this. So yeah.
Nice.
Pinterest and Keen and Tangi.
Yeah. Whole lot of things to look towards to if you're out. Looking for creative stuff, creative things in your life, or to just share to them as well. Pretty neat stuff. Something tells me, though, you know, this is Google. Like, something tells me these things are going to be around for like a year, maybe.
They disappear.
Google will be like, yeah, I don't know why, but we nobody really used goodbye. It, so we're getting rid of it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Goodbye, Tangi. We hardly knew ye. That's what we can look forward to. That is the show, Tech News Weekly. Thank you so much for watching and listening each and every week. We publish the show every Thursday at twit.tv/TNW. That is the show page on the web. So you go there, you can find links to how to subscribe to our audio feed, our video feed, podcatcher of choice, link out to YouTube, subscribe there. Really, you just want to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And we appreciate when you do that.
We do. And of course, you can follow us on social media. We are at Twit on Twitter. We are at twit.tv on Instagram and at twittalk on TikTok. If you want to tweet at me, I'm at Micah Sargent on pretty much all of the social media platforms. And then, of course, you can check out Hands on iOS. Today's episode is about cutting back on those calls, those robocalls and random callers, people you don't know. That is so obnoxious, and there's a simple step you can take in iOS. Head to twit.tv/HOI to subscribe to that show. What about you, Jason?
Well, I don't mind spam calls. So you just load me full of spam calls and I'll listen to them. No, I won't actually. There are ways on Android. I don't know how good they are compared to iOS on blocking spam calls, but I definitely am curious to know how iOS does that. I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. You can find one of my other shows, Hands on Android. New episode published right before showtime here. And it's all about Android 11 Beta 1, which released last week. And it actually brings a couple of new features that we haven't seen in Android 11 developer previews prior. And they're pretty neat features. So I show off kind of a little bit about what you've already seen and kind of some of the updates around those. And then the big new features that are there right now. So twit.tv/HOA. is the show page for that. Subscribe and check that out if you want to find more Android content. Thanks to everyone who helps us do the show each and every week, of course. John, Burke, everybody's helping behind the scenes. We appreciate what you do, and we appreciate you watching and listening. We'll see you all next week on Tech News Weekly. Bye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Be sure to check out the other shows on the network, like my other show, Hands On Wellness. I love to share different tips and tricks that's going to help you get a better grasp on your personal wellness. Just go to twit.tv/how and subscribe now.